On the phone with me now is Rat Fink, a.k.a. Andrew Wilson, who has written a new book that will be out in July of 2000 named Once Upon a Fiend. I guess before we start, well, you were with the band between 87 until 1992.
That's correct.
How did you originally manage to hook up with Alien Sex Fiend?
Well, it's a bit of a long story, actually, which actually starts in the book. But initially, I used to play in a band called the Turnpike Cruisers, and the manager of the band, he actually ran an independent video company, and he used to film bands like the Dead Kennedys and the UK Subs and the Meteors and Alien Sex Fiend. So the manager of the band, he actually knew Alien Sex Fiend anyway. He knew that I was a huge fan of Alien Sex Fiend. I mean, this is what's really magic about the whole book, is that I was actually a fan, like thousands of other kids in the UK in the early 80s, of Alien Sex Fiend. So that's why the book is pretty special, because I was actually a fan of the band.
Mm-hmm.
So actually getting back to how I actually joined them was through the manager that I used to play with, the band I used to play with, the Turnpike Cruisers. He initially came down to our rehearsal and said that, you know, Ratty, I've got some really cool news. The Turnpike Cruisers are supporting Alien Sex Fiend. We've got one show in London and one up in Scotland. And initially that's where it started, and I sort of, you know, hooked up with Nick, and he heard me play the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of weird, really. I mean, once you actually read the book itself, the story opens up and explains that I had a really long sound check. And when you're a support act, it's very rare that you do get a long sound check. And for some strange reason, I got a really long sound check. You know, my kit sounded really cool. So I decided to go into New Christian Music and Dead and Buried and R.I.P. because I knew those beats, because I was highly influenced by them. And not to my acknowledgement, it was like a live audition. It was so cool. Nick and Chris, Nick Fiend and Mrs. Fiend, were at the back of the hall listening to me, but I couldn't see them because, you know, the lighting crew was setting all the lights up and things, and I just got this feeling inside of me just to start, you know, I was so excited, and I just thought, well, you know, Johnny Ha-Ha, the original Sex Fiend drummer, had recently left. The Fiends were just a three-piece at the time, and I just went into these voodoo beats, and Nick just thought, you know, hey, you know, we want a live drummer back in the band again, and here's the guy. And no, I was 19 at the time, and it all just, that's really how it started. But I don't want to give too much away, because the proper story, I'm sure you can
imagine. So you were pretty young then when it all started, 19?
Yeah, I was very, very young indeed, and very sort of in awe of the whole thing. And then when Nick finally did ask me to come down, basically his words were, oh, right, do you fancy coming down to London and having a jam with us? And that was sort of it. And I was like, at the time I was living with my parents, and I was like, what? You know, and now, you know, I'm from the north of England. You know, Alien Sex Fiend were based in the south, which is London, and I'm sort of the Manchester way.
Uh-huh.
So for me to be, you know, go all the way down to London on my own and go in the studio and sort of jam, as Nick called it, with Alien Sex Fiend. I mean, we did jam, but, you know, we wrote Here Come Germs album. You know, just out of
yep.
jamming, we did a track called You Are Soul and Boots On, and you know, and it was just unbelievable. I was so in awe, and I was in the press, and Alien Sex Fiend have got their new drummer, and it was just, it was really, really unbelievable. And for me to swallow that and keep my cool, it was very, very hard work, really.
So you mainly played drums for the band, but you also played guitar?
Yeah, sometimes? Because when I initially joined with the band, Yaxi Hi-Riser, he was still with the band. So I was just really drumming over the drum machines. The Fiends always used drum machines. Even when Johnny was in the band, he used to drum with the drum machines. So I was basically taking Johnny Ha-Ha's throne, really, and doing the same thing. But when Yaxi left, I started playing guitar as well. You know, I was like multi-timbral. Nick said, look, you know, you can play guitar. And, you know, so really I took the job of Yaxi Hi-Riser and Johnny Ha-Ha, and then Doc Milton came in, and it gave me more space to play the drums a little bit more, you know. So, which Doc's featured on the Open Head Surgery album and Another Planet and Curse.
Okay, well, you said your first audition was right around 87. Even at that time, the Sex Fiends, they had quite a musical library.
Definitely.
How long did it take you to really get in sync and learn the music? Because you said you went right down to London for a show.
Well, the thing is, you know, Alien Sex Fiend, it wasn't a case of learning the songs. It was a case of gelling and getting into, because I was into the same, I was basically in the same league as where Nick was coming from. Nick was 10 years older than me, but, you know, I grew up with Alice Cooper and The Cramps and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Evil Dead and all those kind of films.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why me and Nick really got on really well together, because we knew where we were both coming from the same area. And Alien Sex Fiend, I mean, I'll be really honest with you, we hardly rehearsed, because it was a case of Nick was the, you know, he was the master, and we were like the puppeteers, and we used to just animate musically what Nick Fiend did, you know. It was, you know, every show that we did was different. Okay, we might do Ignore the Machine every night in the set, mm-hmm. but the versions were different every time we took the stage, because it was so, you know, I remember one time it was in a magazine, I think it was in Boston, they called us the Shakespeares of the 90s, which I thought was which I thought was very cool, because we didn't have a formula, you know. We had, you know, you look for instance, you look at Marilyn Manson now and Nine Inch Nails and the Young Gods and other bands like that, they work to a formula, and Alien Sex Fiend never works to a formula, and that was the magic about Alien Sex Fiend. We never did that, and so, you know, you could see the kids, the audience, and you could see the face, and it's like, how is this band doing this? But they didn't understand that Nick Fiend, he orchestrated it all by his movements or what he'd say, or, you know, and especially with me playing the guitar, I'd be hanging back on the chord and waiting for Nick to say, I walk the line between good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this apple's rotten to the core, wake up, and then all of a sudden I just think, right, you know, I'm just going to kick in the riff here, you know. It was spontaneous, like Salvador Dali. I mean, that really sums up what Alien Sex Fiend were like, and that's what it was like for me, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, you guys had quite a busy tour schedule, didn't you? You were always doing shows,
yeah.
So that alone, I mean, because you mentioned that you didn't rehearse a whole lot, but when you have that busy of a tour schedule, I mean, that is your rehearsal right there.
Definitely, yeah. I mean,
you're playing so many nights.
You know, if we had a new song to do, basically Nick had come up and soundcheck. Nick didn't really like the soundcheck too much, but he'd come up and would run through Zombified, or, you know, just to make sure everything was all right. But towards the latter part of the Open Air Surgery tour, which was the last tour I ever did with the Sex Fiends, we were getting quite tight, and I think it was getting pretty scary, really, because Nick was like, oh my God, you know, we're getting really, really tight. And I was loving it, because really, as I've mentioned in the book, I really wanted the Fiends to become a little bit more commercial and actually really go out and push it and really, you know, God bless Marilyn Manson. I think Marilyn Manson really, I think they're very cool. But I just, you know, Alien Sex Fiend had that potential to actually go that far. And I, you know, at the time I was married, I had a daughter, you know, I wanted to, you know, okay, I was sort of eating parts of the huge pie, as you might say, but I wanted just a little bit more comfort, and I was really desperate to make the Sex Fiends sort of more commercial and more viable.
And Nick was pretty happy with what the band had developed into at that point.
Sure, yeah, very much so, yeah.
Because he'd already been in it for quite a few years.
Yeah, I think Nick was developing all. Nick does develop anyway, and he was developing all the time and changing things around. But for me, I was just sort of like, I was on the verge of, come on, you know, whatever. Because we did a single called Magic, and we had a couple of guys from Pinewood Studios, which was Bob Keane's Image Animation. They were like a special effects crew, and they'd worked on Aliens and Hellraiser, and they helped do the video. So again, that was like a commercial aspect for us to actually, you know, hit the mainstream, but not necessarily hit it as in like hugely, but just sort of like, you know, hello, you know, Alien Sex Fiend are here and we're gonna bite your ass, you know, kind of thing. That's what I wanted to happen, but, you know, it didn't happen. So
now, did you record in the studio at all with Alien Sex Fiend, or were you mainly involved in
I did. I think I've done about four albums with the Sex Fiend. Yeah, I did Curse, Another Planet, Here Come Germs, and Open Head Surgery, and I was on two live albums as well, Too Much Acid and The Altered States of America, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. If no one's heard that, it's a really cool, it's one of the finest live Alien Sex Fiend albums.
The first time you stepped on stage with Alien Sex Fiend, is that still strong in your mind?
Very, very much so. That's written in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. I think it was at Keele, it was either at Keele University in the UK or Leamington Spa. And it was unreal, because I was very, very nervous and I was very sort of intimidated by what was going on. But Nick sort of eased me through it. I know the most terrifying one for me personally was when I changed onto guitar, because I wasn't hiding behind the drum kit. I was actually playing the guitar, and it was in front of about 3,500 people in Germany. And it was in a place called Bonn, and it was a place called the Biscuit Halle. And the Lords of the New Church were playing, the Cardiacs, Neon Judgment. It was just a huge festival, and Alien Sex Fiend were headlining, and I was absolutely terrified. Absolutely terrified, but it was fantastic, and ever since then I never really looked back. I thought, you know, because I was getting closer and sort of interacting with the audience and just making it all explosive, you know.
Do you miss touring with the band?
Very much so, yeah. I do, actually, yeah. But, you know, it came to a very unusual ending. It was a case of lack of communication, I think. I tried to explain it in the book the best way I possibly could. It was just really a lack of communication. I moved out of my home, and it was, I mean, that's the only way I can sum it up. It was a lack of communication, really.
So how often were you guys on the road, because you did so many shows?
I think the longest tour we ever did, I think it was the States, it was about 3 months on the road non-stop, 2.5 months, 3 months, something like that. But we usually had large breaks. You know, I used to always nip down to Nick and Chris's. At the time they were living in Wales, they still live in Wales in Cardiff. But yeah, we had long, you know, the schedules were kind of long, because we'd do like a couple of weeks in England, and then we'd go into Europe, we'd do Belgium and France and Germany and Spain. Spain was fantastic. Spain was absolutely brilliant. But what I don't want to do, I don't want to discuss it too much, because the book is quite magical.
Oh, I understand. Really. Yeah, you're promoting your book, obviously, and you want to give people a teaser.
Yeah.
Now, what about the death threats?
The death threats. Now, that, unfortunately, was something that, I think it was the Curse Tour. It was definitely the Curse Tour. I'm sure I remember that. What had happened, the Fiends were starting to get a lot of reputation out in Germany for being a crowd-pulling band. You know, we were turning it on in Germany, like 3,000 people every night in Germany. Somebody somewhere started getting jealous. I don't know who it was, whether it was somebody out of a band or somebody out of a group or whatever it was. I'm not too sure what it was, but somebody, it was out of a fanzine. It was like a German industrial gothic fanzine. And what somebody had done, which I thought was completely out of order, and it upset Nick Fiend immensely, somebody had doctored a picture of Nick Fiend singing and actually sort of put a German swastika sort of marking on Nick Fiend's T-shirt, which wasn't there anyway, and then put like an Adolf Hitler moustache underneath Nick Fiend's nose, and like a bubble coming out of his mouth saying something like, we are Nazis and we're going to kill Jews or something like that. And that apparently got into the hands of the anti-Nazi party in Germany. And it was like, it was nothing to do with Alien Sex Fiend. It was somebody in Germany who had a grudge against us, who wanted to cause an upset. Anyway, we had a letter sent to our record company saying something like, I can't remember exactly what the words were, but it was something like, the next time Alien Sex Fiend land on these shores, they're all going to be killed one by one, or something like that. And we had to take it seriously.
Yeah,
we
of course.
Had to take it seriously, because, you know, it was nothing to do with us. We weren't into Nazism. We're not into devil worship. We never were. You know, we never were, period.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were scared. We were terrified. And we had to get security when we landed at the airport. We had security with us. We had security with us all the time. And you'll read in the book, we did have a few altercations at some of the shows we did.
Well, I think you're going to get that anyways, just being in the business. You've got rabid fans no matter what.
Of course, but this wasn't really sort of like, oh, we love you, Alien Sex Fiend, and we, you know, it wasn't like that. It was like somebody trying to be really hurtful towards us, you know, for no reason. And Nick was very, very upset. Nick and Chris were very upset about it. I mean, we all were. I was terrified. You know, I didn't want to go. You know, I was like, oh, shit, you know, I don't do it on the tour. But, you know, you've got to, it's your job, you know, it's what we believe in. And nothing like that was going to stop us, but, weird, yeah.
Did being a part of Alien Sex Fiend destroy your marriage?
That's a very, very cool question. It didn't help, basically. It didn't help at all. I mean, I think I'd say 95% of it was, yeah, because of the finance and me not being able to bring my wife at the time on tour with me. It was a case of... that definitely was the downfall.
Yeah, that was my next question, is if your wife toured with you, but you've answered
that. Yeah, no, it was, to be honest, Alien Sex Fiend lived their life on a shoestring. Everything was on a shoestring budget, and it was a case of bringing girlfriends or wives was just a complete no-no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so every time I went away, and every time I came back home, I had to get to know my wife again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, the more I kept doing that, and the finance wasn't there, and I'm being really honest, when I was with Alien Sex Fiend, I was on, like, $400 a week.
Really?
Which wasn't a lot of money, and all that money mainly went to home.
Even when you toured over here in the States?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. It was, you know, Alien Sex Fiend was like, you know, it was like doing a Hammer horror film. You know, it was like low budget, pulling as much money as we can, but it all went out again, you know, and that's what it was like. Or that's what I was told.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was initially told by Nick and Chris, and
Well, I've never been privy to one of your live shows, but it's more than just, they were more than just concerts, weren't they? It was somewhat performance
art
as well.
So. Very, very much so. I mean, Nick Fiend is a performer and he's an artist, and he's a comedian on the stage, but he has this, you know, it's a facade that Nick Fiend has. It's a persona that he has. It's a character. Nick Fiend is a character very similar to Alice Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nick Fiend... Well, it's very obvious Nick Fiend is a huge influence on Alice Cooper, but Nick Fiend has taken other things and sliced them up and stuff, but it was a performance, always, but again, it was never rehearsed. We wouldn't rehearse, you know, Nick Fiend might be upside down in a dustbin somewhere, you know, scourging for schools, ready to kick out into the audience, then bananas would come on stage and stuff, but it, none of it was rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
But to the audience, it looked like it was rehearsed. It was all just us having a laugh and... Basically, the whole thing about Alien Sex Theme, it was a case of have a really good time, enjoy it whilst it lasts, and get everybody else to join in. There was nothing serious about Alien Sex Theme. It was Alien Sex Theme was a huge joke for me, but not as in a joke as in being cynical.
Mm-hmm.
It was a joke as in, like, you know, the first time you smoke weed, or the first time you do something, a sexual experience or whatever. It could be funny, it could be exciting, it could be what, and that's really what Alien Sex Theme was. You know, it might sound kind of weird, but that's what it was, you know.
In 1992, you left the band.
Yep.
I'm sure you want to save the details for your book.
I do indeed, yeah.
But in the end, was it your decision to leave in the end?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you're in England, and your mainstream over there is a little different than the mainstream here. But how do you feel about the newer groups such as Marilyn Manson and others, which are now considered gothic?
Yeah, I think it's pretty healthy, actually. I think it's really cool, and I just wish the Fiends were amongst what's going on, for instance, like, not so much Cradle of Filth, but Placebo, definitely Marilyn Manson, and all these other goth bands. I mean, even Slipknot, for
Slipknot has a good sound going on right now.
I think they rock. I think they're superb, Slipknot, you know. But there's other bands that I do like, and... You know, I don't have any grudge against any of these bands. I think, you know, okay, if you've got the finance to do awesome videos like Marilyn Manson has done, and to afford the contact lenses, and to afford the cool tattoos, excellent. You know, thumbs up. I mean, there's some cool pictures of Marilyn Manson in my book anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a nice little part about Marilyn Manson in the book as well. And
A lot of people here don't consider Marilyn Manson gothic.
No, they don't. It's kind of weird, isn't it, really?
You know, to be gothic means you're going to be a band like...
Sisters of Mercy.
Well, that are Christian Death, Type O Negative, bands that really don't make it. If a band makes it and goes in the mainstream, which Marilyn Manson has, they're no longer considered gothic.
But what is gothic? You know, people used to call Alien and Sex being gothic, and we were like... I remember one time, it was again in America, it was a review, and they called us zombie... They called us something like zombie jazz... Mm-hmm. Voodoo Billies or something like that, and I thought that's more like it. We're not a goth band, you know. We were pigeonholed because of the makeup and the Hammer Horror look, and you know.
Well, I'm a little bit older, like yourself, and I did consider Alien Sex Fiend gothic in the 80s.
Definitely.
Just as I can say, if someone asked me gothic, I would say The Cure.
Yeah.
You know, bands of that nature, the pre-alternative bands of the early 80s.
Yeah.
So.
But what was funny with Alien Sex Fiend, what made me attach to them straight away, was Alien Sex Fiend were like an electronic, a more disturbing version of the Sex Pistols, because Nick Fiend was from the same area as where John Lydon came from, so he had that kind of voice as well.
Uh-huh.
And Nick Fiend screamed very much like John Lydon. But there was, like, Alice Cooper thrown in there as well. And you know, in the early 80s, Alien Sex Fiend, now, I'm telling you now, when they came on board... In the press in the UK, at that time, when all the bands you had around doing that kind of thing was like Duran Duran and Depeche Mode, but they were kind of safe, you know, and Alien Sex Fiend appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I was into hardcore punk at that time. I was into, like, The Exploited and GBH and hardcore British punk rock bands, you know, Mohawks and all that kind of stuff. And I used to hang around with a group of guys all the time, and all of a sudden, Alien Sex Fiend came along and the Cramps, and that was it. I just totally changed. I dyed my hair black. I started wearing fiendish makeup. long frock coats and fiendish, and all my friends that was like, oh my god, Rat has gone gay on us, he's gone, he's turned into a faggot, oh my god, you know. But I'd moved on because I'd seen something different and something exciting that really set me up. And, you know, sort of getting back to the story, for me to join Alien Sex Fiend was just the most wonderful thing that ever happened to my life, really.
Because, you know,
it was just wonderful.
On a different note, have you kept up with the Metallica Napster controversy?
Have I what? Say that again.
Have you kept up with, are you familiar with Napster?
No.
Oh, you're not, okay, so there's a whole musical thing.
Oh, so about the MP3.
Yes, with Metallica suing and such.
Yeah, it's a bit, I don't read up.
I'm curious what kind of news that's making over in England. It's very big over here right now.
But funny enough, there was a documentary on the television a couple of nights ago regarding it, and Paul McCartney's trying to sue a company here as well, apparently. He's not happy about it. But what are you going to do? I mean, it's like the way out west. I mean, you can't, there's no law. What are you going to do about it?
It's going to force the music industry, in my opinion, to reevaluate how they market music.
They're going to have to.
But in the same token, the artists are not wrong. I mean, they are being stolen from.
Indeed. I mean, if that was me, I'd be screaming.
And the minute they pull down Napster, three more pop up in their place.
Yeah.
So.
It's just, I mean, what do you do about it? I mean, I think initially what there was plans in Europe especially. I think what they're going to do is that, okay, you want to download off the MP3, and you want Britney Spears' new single. That's going to cost you.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to cost you like $20 or whatever. Even for a single, it's going to cost you $20 unless you go to the shop and pay for it.
Yeah.
They're going to have to do something like that, aren't they? You know, otherwise it's just going to go crazy.
All right. Well, what are your current projects aside from promotion of your book?
I've got a really cool new junk rock band called Uncle Fester.
Mm-hmm.
We're sort of like Nashville Pussy, Buck Cherry. I've sort of gone away from all the electronic sequencer kind of stuff now. I've really gone back to my roots, really. Sort of AC/DC, early Bon Scott AC/DC. There's a band called The Backyard Babies that are from Sweden. They really rock. And a hardcore superstar. Just basically, there's a big scene in Europe at the moment, and it's called Junk Rock. The Toilet Boys, I'm sure you're aware of the Toilet Boys.
That doesn't ring a bell.
No, they're from LA, they're a band called the Toilet Boys.
Really?
They really kick ass, they're brilliant. Basically, it's just pure energetic rock and roll music that I'm playing.
And there's a lot of exciting stuff coming out right now, it's a good time in the
industry. Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's lots of cool bands. I try and get to see as many bands as I possibly can, because again, that fuels me. You know, I go and watch a band and I think, right, I'm going to steal that drum beat. I've recently listened to Alice Cooper's new stuff, and Alice has just, he's just blown me away completely. He's gone back, well, he's not gone back, but he's doing something now that is just absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get the chance to stick it on, I mean, have you got a copy of Brutal Planet, the new single?
No, we don't. No, we don't. The Cooper stuff we have is older stuff.
Right.
So.
Well, it was released yesterday.
Oh, that's why.
It was here in Europe anyway.
Do you have any book signings scheduled?
I have got one in London coming up in August, and I've got one sort of hopefully around the same date. The actual release date is the 31st of July.
Okay.
Which is a Monday, and I'm gonna have a local one here for my friends and family. Maybe Uncle Fester are gonna play, and a couple of DJs spinning some cool tracks, and you know, and then maybe some other ones. I'm not too sure, but. I just hope the people that, you know, who are listening to this show and do read the book, you know, you guys may not even have heard of Alien Sex Fiend or even seen Alien Sex Fiend, but, you know, just check the book out, because, you know, we all have dreams in our lives, and I was very, very fortunate to have my dream come true, and it could have been with any band, you know, but it was Alien Sex Fiend, of a band that, you know, started a revolution, really, in the culture in England, and I was really pleased to be a part of it, should I say.
Well, we do have a good number of listeners in England there, too, so I'm sure they'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
Anything final you'd like to add?
I just hope your radio station keeps rocking.
Mm-hmm.
And just please buy my book and enjoy it. You know, get off on it, you know. Enjoy it.
All right, well, Once Upon a Fiend by Pete McKenna and Rat Fink will be available July 31st.
Yeah.
Distributed by Nora Publishing. The cover price is $19.95 US or $11.99 in English pounds. Any additional contact information you'd like to give? Website you'd like to plug or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, you can contact me, and it's ratx at fsmail.net.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you for being my guest this evening, Andy.
Hey, Cancer, no problem.